Hi, this is Michael McConaughey. I'm the voice of Vampire Hunter D and a lot of other things. I've been very fortunate in being able to be a whole lot of different people in my career. You are listening to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, and you better enjoy it.
He is the son of a vampire man who fell in love with a human woman. His mother was later turned into Nosferatu against her will, but she wanted Blade spared from her dark world. It was her final act of love. Blade ran off and soon discovered that he was blessed, or cursed, by being part vampire. But not all vampire. The transformation was not total. He has the quickness, the strength, the agility, but is unaffected by sunlight. And he is immune to the venom of his blood-sucking brethren. Now he aches to destroy all those who condemned him to a life as a freak of nature. And he yearns to find his mother again.
I know what it means to be different. It's not an easy thing.
I found Blade, and I raised him. I focused his anger to where it belonged, protecting innocent people from the vampire scourge. He can match any Nosferatu in a way that no human ever could.
Welcome back to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all vampire movies in the MCU. And I consider Blade to be part of the MCU after what we saw in Deadpool and Wolverine, don't you, Brian?
Sure. I'll go ahead and I'll co-sign that.
Okay,
sure.
Sure. And we're here to talk about Blade Minutes 15 to 20 with my special guest star, a man who's written an issue or two of Blade himself. Thank you for joining me once again, Brian Hill.
I'm happy to be here.
Brian E. Hill, or is it just Brian Hill?
It doesn't matter.
Okay, I just want to make sure there was like...
It doesn't matter what my name is.
No, as long as you're not the motherfucker trying to ice skate uphill, right?
I have been that motherfucker, though. That's the thing. Okay. I have been that. I did not listen. I heard the Gospel of Blade, but like the Pharisees, I could not be helped.
The Gospel of Blade, which you have written about multiple times. Do you have another Blade series in you to write? Is it something you're tapping the door of C.B. Skibuski and going, hey, I got another one?
Well, I've had some early conversations.
Bring back the blood people. You know, all the people that, like, Hannibal King, never used.
Well, look, I love writing the character. I think it's really cathartic. It's a fun thing to do. I'm just really busy.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard for me to commit, you know, because my primary focus is screenwriting and filmmaking, right?
Oh.
So, like, that's really what I do most of the time. I like writing comics because I enjoy the art form and I like the relationship I can have with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
But if my schedule opens up and there's will around it over there, I certainly would be open to it, for sure.
So our 5 minutes begin with Blade taking Karen for an incredible leap in the air and cool blue light on the Daywalkers, what I wrote down for my notes. I think
that's
it's
highly accurate.
Yeah, I think there is some cool blue light. But yeah, so Karen, he picks up Karen and does it, like, smiles back at the cops and then has this incredible leap and then throws her, like, what are you doing, dude? And this, of course, dislocates her shoulder.
Well, you know, like, I kind of like the idea, the consequence of that, right? Just, like, superheroes interacting with normal people in their heightened ways. Normal people aren't Tonka trucks. Things happen.
Yeah. Do you, we get, like, 2 minutes almost. I counted it on the DVD. I was watching. Sorry, I had the 4K of Blade. And I'm watching it, and it's almost 2 minutes of city streets moving really fast to show the passing of time.
Oh yeah, that's the cool, like, Stephen Norrington kind of time lapsey thing he was doing.
Yeah.
It's
been done in multiple films of the 90s, and I think it's only a 90s trope thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, possibly, right? You know, look, like, I think Blade dates really well. I think it does feel a little time capsule in places, but it's a time capsule that's fun to go back to. I think there are a lot of other 90s things that don't date particularly well, right? And again, I got to take my hat off and give it to Norrington because I just think he was a filmmaker that was like a cut above.
Indeed. Yeah, true. While we were introduced to Whistler, who calls Karen bringing back a stray. And this is played by the late, great Kris Kristofferson, who we just lost, too.
Yeah, I mean, look, well, Christofferson's like a guy that had pretty much succeeded at everything in a phenomenal way before I was even born, right? I don't like he was, you know, he was a legendary guy. I didn't know him very much. I mean, I knew he was in like movies my mom liked, and my mom had an album of his. And I just knew he was like a cool guy of note to have in something like this. But he works phenomenally well.
If you listen to his music, a lot of his music is kind of sad, and it's about death and depression and things like that. His music was not always happy.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, it's kind of like dark folk, sort of country, kind of whatever. You know, it's very emotive. I love it for that. I don't listen to it a lot because it does certainly like create a vibe. But I've always appreciated the deeply emotive aspects of it. You know, it feels like you're listening to something that's tied into somebody's heart.
But when I saw this movie, I had no idea who he was. I didn't know he was this famous country singer. I didn't know he was in this famous movie called A Star Is Born, which got remade many years later with Lady Gaga and Rocket Raccoon actor Bradley Cooper. You know, he's in all three of these Blade films in one way or another. You know, spoiler alert, he dies in this film, comes back, dies again, and comes back, dies again, comes back. But the final death is in the third film. But I was immediately hooked on him. Went back and watched you know, some of his other films like Convoy and things like that. Time of his passing, worth $50 million.
Well, yeah, I mean, the guy had an illustrious career. Yeah, you know, I knew he was like ambiently somebody important, but I wasn't really like super versed in his work at the time I saw the film.
Yep.
Right. But I knew enough to be like, oh, that guy, right? I did have a, oh, that guy feeling. And frankly, there aren't that many people around nowadays that can even give you the, oh, that guy.
He injects Karen with this like garlic-like substance. Can you imagine being injected with garlic?
Well, no, but I imagine it would hurt.
Yeah, a lot. I imagine it's kind of like a few years ago, I had an infection on my leg, and they had to lance it in order to drain it. Ouch.
Sometimes no matter you know what era we're in, the medicine they use is basically just the fucking Witcher. Frankly, sometimes we're just on some medieval shit still.
Yeah. While this is happening, Blade, like, again, this, it seems like Blade, this whole thing reminds Blade of his mom. And while she's convulsating or whatever, he just puts his hand directly on her to calm her down just very gently, like he would a cat that's, like, freaking out.
Right. Well, Blade doesn't really have too much of a bedside manner, right? Like, that's not really his thing. Which is there's a charm in him and Whistler and their complete lack of emotive understanding.
Correct.
Of a normal person's experience.
And then the next, it switches over, and this is where why I wrote down Cool Blue Light, because we get the Vampire Council with all of the heads of the different houses, and we meet Dragonetti, who I always thought was Dragon Eddie, but it's Dragonetti. It's like one word, played by the distinguished actor Udo Kier. And we also get introduced to Stephen Dorff, who plays Deacon Frost.
Yeah, Udo Kier, Blade villain. Yeah, Udo Kier is a legend of like European cinema. That's one of the things that's really interesting about Blade, is it's this like collage of people that are kind of culturally prominent, but they're a little niche. But you throw them all in the same movie and you just get like a vibe. You know, like every casting choice in that movie to me is really interesting. I think everyone distinguishes themselves and brings like their own sort of energy to the affair in a considered way, which makes it cool, you know, because you're just like, okay, like who's this guy with this weird accent and the whole thing. And then Stephen Dorff, I still think, doesn't get enough credit for his work as Deacon Frost. I think
no,
he's amazing.
And I try to give it to him by inviting him on the show for an interview, but his management got back to me and said he is not interested.
I mean, you know, like a lot of people just are kind of scared of the no rules zone of podcasts and all of that, right? And I mean, he also might be, I mean, he's done like great work, and he just might be like, yeah, I don't really feel like coming back and reminiscing over a thing I did a billion years ago, you know, and
but I'll go really to a convention, put those photos on my table and charge you $50 to $100 for an autograph.
I mean, shit, I would do that too.
Right. But what you're saying though, the hypocrisy of like, I don't want to talk about that movie ever again, or I have no interest in talking about that movie on a podcast or doing interviews. And it just to me sounds like you're not interested in interacting with your fandom unless I pay you money for an autograph, because you're going to have pictures of Deacon Frost on your table, as it's the only thing most people remember you by.
Well, I've met Steven a couple times, and he's a cool dude. He's a cool dude.
I hope so. I hope to meet him too. You know what I mean? But I would like to ask him, hey, was this your manager? Or was this you?
Like real talk, sometimes it's just like how a thing gets to a person, what kind of mood they're in when it gets to them.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, I mean, I've had terrible experiences with people that everybody said was cool. And then I had one of the worst experiences with an actor that everyone thinks is like the coolest guy in the world.
Oh,
right. Cool. I'm not going to say.
Oh, okay.
I just chalk it up to, you know, bro was having a bad day.
Gotcha.
You know, I was in an elevator with him. I think he was shooting a thing. And I was like, you know, hey, man, you know, we have these mutual friends, and he kind of just brushed me off. And I was like, all right, dude was just having a bad day.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. By the way, there's an Udo Kier's closet picks for the Criterion Collection on their YouTube channel. It's worth checking out. It's like 8 minutes long, too. Those are usually like 4 to 5 minutes long. So he does this for 8 minutes. If you want to see Udo Kier pick out his favorite movies, go watch that video.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, I didn't know about that until I was looking through the things, and I was like, Udo Kier did a Criterion Closet? I did a fake Criterion Closet thing. My roommate has a library of films in his house. It's incredible. It's the thing I'm going to miss the most, but I'll survive. And I had someone shoot me in the library, like picking out, I strategically placed my Criterion films. I did 3 of them. So I have like 15 Criterion films. So I put like 5 of them in each one of the videos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So we made it. There's a bunch of other vampires in the scene too with Dragon Eddie. They're not really given a lot of names to their characters. There's just like one or two that are actually given a name. Von Esper, played by Earl Van Douglas. And, I think that's it. I mean, I can't identify a lot of the other vampires in the scene because on the IMDb, there's not much of like who was in the scene with them. And there's like, you know, but there's listings of all the different house glyphs and stuff.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I in prepping for this, I tried to like look up the supporting people and was like, oh man, I don't even know all these folks.
I mean, it's a big crowd of vampires around a big table discussing, you know, Frost's behavior, which they don't enjoy because he's all like, you know, well, in the next scene, in the next 5 minutes, he gets into why. But he's there for a disciplinary meeting with the vampires. Now, just to point out, Frost is a created vampire. They were all born vampires, which is the whole thing I've always been like, how do you get birth as a vampire? In the Blaine TV show, they have a little girl vampire. She was a spitfire and dangerous as hell, really scary little child actress playing a vampire who's a couple hundred years old. But she doesn't like Van Scriver. He's the name of the crime lords. Probably.
Well, Chris, when a mommy vampire and a daddy vampire really like each other.
I don't know, man. I just don't think you should be like, I don't know. The believability of like vampires giving birth is ridiculous. I know it's the big plot line in the last Twilight movie, but
well, when we're in a land of vampire hunters and muscle cars and Lamagra blood gods, I just kind of go with it. Right? I'm just like, cool. You know, I'm going to all right. There's True Bloods and Converted, and they have their own little weird kind of racial hierarchy. Fair enough. I'll take it. You know, let's keep it moving. So I was just down. I was like, okay, cool.
Well, that's pretty much how we end our 5 minutes. As I said, it's cool blue lighting, and that's what we get, like, in this scene. We get some really awesome lighting, which I think is cool.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of my favorite things to write and kind of one of my favorite scenes to see is always like the round table of like the bad guys, you know, like that's always fun for me when, you know, like you think about like Spectre, I think it's in there too, and a billion other things, but I like the energy of it. You know, I just love like the energy of like Deacon being this like punk rock, fuck you 90s. I feel like I drank myself out of a boy band look he's got going on.
I also think they watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, who at least had two, it's in its, I think it's in its like third season at this point when the Blade TV series is.
There's a little bit of that in
Spike,
there, you know,
yeah.
that kind of alternate like alt-rot 90s swagger going on with
it. Yeah, I think they're all like they're all like the Christopher Lee style vampires. And this is like the 90s vampire. Frost is us. There, he's me and you in the 90s.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... That's the delineation, right? I mean, you've got your kind of your regal, like, you know, court of vampires kind of style. And then you had your bit of a new school, you know, sort of like garage band vampire deal, right? Which I guess sort of, like... found a permanence in the popular culture, probably with the Lost Boys. That's probably where like that turned into a thing that people kept visiting and revisiting a lot. And then ever since David from the Lost Boys, there's been a whole bunch of like incarnations of David from the Lost Boys.
Oh, right. Yes. I forgot about David from the Lost Boys as well. Yeah. That's totally like, that's definitely like the Spike and the Frost character. And I like that character. You know what I mean? They're just like living that lifestyle. And yeah, they're going to be the villain. They're not going to be the good guy. Because if they're the good guy, they're going to be, oh, I'm sad about the things I did to people as a vampire. That's Angel. You know what I mean?
Well, and Deacon Frost is kind of, he's sort of like prescient, right?
Yeah, because he doesn't care, though.
Like, Frost and his ilk, they kind of represent, like, shitty metropolitan crypto people.
Yes, definitely.
Right? I live in downtown LA. I see Deacon Frost, like, four times a week. Just, like, some... reasonably like good looking, overstyled dude with his overstyled crew. They have too much money and no sense of how they're coming off to the world, right? I mean, I see him Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night all the time. It's kind of fun to watch Wesley Snipes go beat those guys up.
Definitely. Well, Brian, thank you for joining me once again for the 5 minutes of Blade. As a person who knows a thing or two about Blade, you know, your insight into the character and your insight into the comic book trivia and knowledge behind the scenes and things like that is fantastic. Hopefully we get another Blade series from you. I was disappointed, but I understand that you couldn't even hint to us what was happening in Blade with him being taken over by Varney the Vampire. And then, you know, we had you on the show, your book led right up to nothing happening, and then all of a sudden Blade's a bad guy, and I was just like, what? I just had the guy who wrote the comic book on my show. What is this? Blade's the bad guy? You know,
look, part of working in the game is being able to keep secrets.
Oh, I figured you were in on that secret. You just couldn't say anything.
I just couldn't say anything.
I knew they had to have told you, because your book ended, and then a month later, Bloodhunt started. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the first issue, it's a real Blade the bad guy. And then at the end of the fourth issue, you find out, oh, the reason why is because he's being possessed by Varney the Vampire. You know, which is like it's the Parallax thing. You couldn't just make Blade the bad guy. Also, why would Blade go bad? But it's the Parallax thing. It's like the back end to make like the hero redeemable because he's being possessed by a greater evil. Which is what happened to Hal Jordan when I say the Parallax thing.
So I get it. Yeah. I remember. Okay. Coast City.
Yeah, Coast City. Which, by the way, at the time, I was shocked because I didn't read Green Lantern, but I knew Hal Jordan from like Super Friends and sporadic appearances. You know, so I knew who Green Lantern Hal Jordan was. And when I found out he went bad because his city got blown up by Cyborg Superman, I was like, oh my God, that was crazy. And then and then years later, like, how are they going to put this genie back in the bottle?
Right.
And it took someone like Geoff Johns to come up with the idea of like, oh, so what's the impurity in the ring? Why is yellow a big problem? Finally going to explain it.
Right.
It's kind of like Wolverine's origin, things like that. You know, long sought after mysteries of comics that paid off in gargantuan amounts of money for the publisher. So. But your people can find you once a month on the newsstands reading Ultimate Black Panther, which is, by the way, I think Ultimate Black Panther is going to be having a crossover coming up in Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion as Miles Morales has entered the new Ultimate Universe And as of the first issue, you would be stupid not to figure out that Billy, his sister, landed in Wakanda because somebody calls her Little One. It has to be Storm.
I have no comment.
You have no comment, but it's very obvious considering the drawings behind her look like a jungle. So I don't expect you to comment, but that's my hypothesis. Also, Storm and Black Panther and Ultimate Wolverine are on the cover. So.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that's come on. The giveaway is right on the cover that Miles is going to run into Wakanda at some point. You know, his adventure with Peter and his son are going to end. He's going to run into them and probably run to Russia as well because Ultimate Wolverine's on the cover. So. But this is leading up to, obviously, the big Ultimate crossover, which I know you can't talk about, but we all know is probably coming between all the books, including the X-Men, which have been kind of off in their own little section of the Ultimate Universe for a while with no interaction, except for Ultimate Wolverine. And
yeah,
Storm.
Well,
and Storm, obviously.
If I knew, I couldn't say.
I know. But we'll pump you for information later on. And you can find me over on my vampire-related book, Vlada, A Dracula Tale, where we gender-swap the cast of Dracula in a graphic novel. I had my first signing at a Barnes & Noble yesterday in Smithfield, Rhode Island. Thank you. It was an actually really receptive crowd, more to Vlada than my biography book, The New England Comic Book Store Owners. I had more people interested in the vampire book than the book I was actually there for, which was really nice. Not that I'm not going to promote Vlada, but I was really there to promote my brand new book, The New England Comic Book Store Owners, a biography of comic book store, brick and mortar stores throughout New England. And then you can also find me on a variety of other shows. The other comic book related podcast I do, least related to Marvel, is the Spectacular Sal Buscema Era podcast. I do that with a variety of hosts. We're going to be covering a Tombstone three-parter. We just posted an episode about Nocturne. Nocturne was a black superhero vampire bat-like creature experiment of Baron Zemo. She was a former cop. I think it was basically Marvel's answer to being like, hey, Vampirella's hot. We should do that. But not like that, but different in our own way. And you look at the way she's drawn by, let's say, Mark Bagley. Yeah, you could tell there was a lot of Vampirella influence in her costume. So I digress. A character they don't use that often, by the way. And FYI, hey, look at that, Brian. I just gave you an idea. If you do the Blade series again, bring in Nocturne. She's like a bat-like creature that's kind of hot that her and Blade could, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, birds and the bees.
Yeah, and FYI, she hasn't been used in anything other than popping up in a spotlight for LGBT characters in a background. And she was in the Pride Parade. And you're like, that's it? That's all we get of her? It's like, we haven't seen her in 30 years, but then she's there in a parade?
You know, we're working it out. We're trying to figure out... We're eventually going to figure out a way to... Make the tent big enough for everybody and let everybody be cool.
Definitely. Well, Brian, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. Don't forget you can like, subscribe, and comment on this on our various platforms that we're on. Please leave a rating on iTunes or Amazon Music or Stitcher, Google Play, that doesn't exist anymore. But wherever you happen to find this podcast, please leave a comment and a high-star rating as well. And we'll be back in another 5 minutes of Blade on the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast.